chapter 5. So turn back to Galatians chapter 5, 22 through 25. We want to look back again at kindness. Now, we spoke about it last week, but there's a couple of different ways kindness is used in different circumstances. Galatians 5, the same verses we've been through. We've been in the fruits of the Spirit for several weeks now. And I think people have enjoyed it, not because I've done it or anything, but people have been very positive in their responses. And if we can get something out of it, that's wonderful. And I think people are. So we've spoken about the fruits of the Spirit, how the things that we should have as believers, okay? And we also talked about how when we started out the first week, we did love, joy, and peace, and the other things build off that. I can't be kind if I don't have love in my heart. I can't be kind if I don't have peace in my heart. I can't be long-suffering and patient with someone if I don't have love and peace in my heart. So these are things that build, that we need, and we constantly have to work on because it's not always easy. And that's the reason. If this is easy, we could go by and talk about it 5 minutes and move on to something else. But a lot of times, we know love is the main thing we're to have in our hearts, but sometimes that is the hardest thing in the world to do. It's hard to be kind in certain situations. Okay? So, Galatians 5, 22 through 25. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, and peace. That's what we talked about in week one. Forbearance or long-suffering. That's what we talked about in week two. Kindness or gentle kindness last week. Goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such things there is no law. Those who belong to Christ Jesus have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires. Since we live by the Spirit, let us keep up in step with the Spirit. Let us not become conceited, provoking, and envying each other. So last week, we started out on kindness. And we spoke about kindness in the sense of giving it back to people, giving kindness to people when they make things personal with us. Now, we talked about love being wanting that other person's highest good. Well, what would be the antithesis of good, of wanting that highest outcome for the other person? For that other person want the lowest outcome for you, that would want the worst thing to happen to you, and that's the way they treat you, and that's what they think about you. And there's plenty of people out there, because you're a Christian, who think that about you. But we need to be as Christ, and we need to be kind, and it's tough in those situations. And there's a lot of times it has nothing to do with being a Christian. That's just the way people in the world are. They got to be mean-spirited. That's the seed of Adam. And we face that all the time. But turning the other cheek sometimes is the hardest thing in the world to do. It's hard to be kind when you're getting those kind of responses from people. Okay? So there is that type of kindness. Okay? Being kind to people who treat you in every way but that. Now this week, I want to look at two more ways of kindness. Number one, being kind when it's draining. That's the individuals, they're not ugly to you. They don't hate you. They don't want the worst possible outcome for you. There's just a lot of baggage there. And there's a lot of things that just wear and wear, and it wears you out to be kind. When you could walk away from it, it'd probably be easier, but you're trying to be kind, you're trying to have the fruits of the Spirit, and it wears you out. Okay? But there's also the kindness that we have as a Christian because that's just who we are. It's what we do habitually. It's in our spirit to be kind. Now, I want to look at the first one, examples of kindness when it's draining. Turn to 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. I know this as a school teacher. And we've got a lot of school teachers in here currently, a lot that are retired, and they'll probably get a big amen from them, because they know how hard it is every day to pour your love into kids, and so many of them, it's draining. It wears you out, especially when you know that the kids that you have so many bad circumstances and issues away from school. It's tiresome. It really does. And I tell Missy, I come in, she's the same way. Come home on Friday and I said, I'm exhausted. I'm not been out digging a ditch or anything, but it's just sucked all the energy out of it. But you have to be kind. You have to keep on giving. I was speaking to a parent and they were talking about their kid, and I was talking about how many in another class, how many kids there were in there that needed the same help that her kid was getting. And she said, I don't care about those other kids. I just care about mine. And I said, look, I understand that from your point, but as a teacher, I can't operate like that. I have to care about all of them equally. And if I do start caring about one kid, what happens if I care about that one kid and your kid ain't the one? So I have to love all of them, and no matter the circumstance, whether they've had a good day, whether they've had a bad day, my reaction to them and how I help them can't change. In fact, the worse day they have, the more I have to help. So that's kind of where we are as Christians. Now, Paul had it in his ministry. Look at 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. So Paul's talking about his ministry here. And he says, but we have been approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel. So we speak not intending to please people, but to please God who examines our hearts. So he says, look, my ministry is not to please people. My ministry is to please God. Okay? It's 1 Thessalonians. It always makes me nervous when I hope I've given you the right verse. 1 Thessalonians 2, 4 through 7. Okay? Did I tell you right? Are we good? Okay, I'm sorry. Verses 4 through 7. I'm sorry. 1 Thessalonians 2, 4 through 7. I look around. I live in constant fear. I've given the wrong scripture. All right. But we have been approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel. So we speak not intending to please people, but to please God, who examines our heart. For we never came with flattering speech, as you know, nor with pretext for greed. God is our witness. Nor did we speak honor from people, either from you, from others, though we could have assorted our authority as apostles of Christ. So he starts right there. He says there's a lot of reason people get into the ministry. There's a lot of reasons that people get into leadership roles in church. They want power. They want authority. They want to tell other people what to do. They want that sense of importance. And then people will get into ministry because they think there's money to be made. All these, I shouldn't say all, but so many of them on television, okay, they are making money hand over fist in their ministry. Okay? So, there's all these reasons, wrong reasons, that people get involved in ministry and people get involved in leadership roles in the church. Okay? But Paul says this, but we proved to be gentle among you as a nursing mother tenderly cares for her children. That's the way Paul treated his ministry. Kindness. When I think of a nursing mother, I think of kindness. Okay? And I've thought a lot about this, especially having a 9-month-old grandchild. Okay? The nursing mother. He doesn't use the stage as a mother of an adolescent, a mother of a teenager, a mother of a college graduate. It is a nursing mother. That mother has to be there for every step and every breath of that child. That child cannot function and live unless that mother is there. Its very life depends on that mother. Now, I see it with jobs. Okay, I'm sorry to bring him up here, but I see it, okay? I know how tiresome it is for Morgan. I know how tiresome it is for Missy. And fortunately, she's got help with Missy and Rose. But like last night, he's at our house. Man, he's wide open, rare, ready to go all night long. And I said, good, you can have him. I'm going downstairs and sleeping. So he never said treat it like a grandfather. It said, or a dad. Men are no good at this stuff. I'll admit it. But it's as a nursing mother tenderly cares for her children. That's the way Paul treated the entire ministry. That's the way he treated not only one church, but all his churches and everyone in those churches, because the churches are made up of individuals. So that's the way Paul was with everybody. Now, I'm amazed. At home football games, I had a parent tell me, look, grandkids right now and kids said, but they'll be better once they get up about 5, 6, 7 years old. You can just turn them loose and they can do whatever. So I'd keep the gate at the football game, the pass gate. And on the other side, on the visitor side behind the bleachers, there's a big open field over there. And I think every kid in town's over there during the games just running wild. They're playing and running and wrestling and playing football and doing whatever. And that, I understand that, middle school kids and things like that. They got all this energy. But I look up and here'll go 2, 3, 4-year-olds just running across through there, climbing up the back of the bleachers. I saw one, he couldn't have been 4 or 5 years old. He must have been 10 feet up in there, swinging on the back of the bleachers, on the back. And I'm asking Molly, I'm going, where are the parents? Where are they at? I mean, you got all these kids everywhere, but Paul wasn't like that. Paul was saying, as a mother, a nursing mother, takes care of her child, that's the way I took care of the church and the congregations. Okay? Constant care and kindness. Now, you don't think that was draining? You don't think that took a lot out of Paul? Turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 11. It was draining. 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verses 27 through 28. 2 Corinthians chapter 11 is not an easy chapter to read. Paul talks about what all he'd suffered. How many times he'd been whipped by the religious leaders and flogged. 39 stripes, 40 would kill an individual. They were so good at it. They knew exactly what to do. 40 was the lethal blow. They stopped just short of death. That happens 3 times. He was stoned to death. He was robbed. He went hungry. He was persecuted. He was in prison. He was shipwrecked. Everything possibly that could happen to an individual happened to Paul. And in the midst of all that, he still had to treat these churches and everyone in them as a nursing mother tenderly cares for the children, for her child. Now look at verses 27 and 28. Paul says, I have been in labor and hardship through many sleepless nights, in hunger and thirst, often without food, in cold and exposure, as destitute as you can imagine. Now look at this verse. He says, but apart from such external things, there is the daily pressure on me of concern for all my churches. No matter what Paul was going through and how bad it got, that pressure never waned. It was exhausting, constantly concerned about his churches and those in them. Why? They may turn away. False teachers might come in. Their persecution and just daily things in life that you would go through in the church body. But constantly concerned and worried because of his kindness. Did Paul give up? Nope. Paul certainly didn't give up. That's why at the end he said, I fought a good fight. I've kept the faith. He never gave up. He kept loving. He kept helping. He kept showing kindness no matter what he was going through. Turn to 2 Timothy chapter 2. 2 Timothy chapter 2, 24 through 27. 2 Timothy chapter 2, 24 through 27. So Paul's coming down to the end. Paul's virtually in 2 Timothy in his last hours on death row. He knows, he said, I'm getting ready to be offered up. He knew that. So he's giving advice to Timothy of how to carry on the ministry. Okay? So he's looking back here, not only giving advice to Timothy, but kind of looking back on his life and his ministry. So verses 24 through 27. And hang on a second. Okay. The Lord's bond, the 2 Timothy 2, 24 through 27. Hold on. Okay. Through 26, I'm sorry. 26, I'm sorry. The Lord's bondservant must not be quarrelsome, but be kind to all, skillful in teaching, patient, and wronged. Verse 25. With gentleness, correcting those who are in opposition, if perhaps God may grant them repentance, leading to the knowledge of the truth. And they will come to their senses and escape from the snare of the devil, having been held captive by him to do his will. So Paul's saying, as a bondservant, as a slave to Christ, as a minister for Christ, he said, you're not to be quarrelsome, but kind. Okay? Not only skillful in teaching, but patient when you are wrong. Patient when you are wrong. When people do bad things to you, when they say something about you, when you don't feel like you've been treated fairly, you don't lash out, you're patient. That's hard to do. Hard to do. And he said, with gentleness, correcting those who are in opposition. That goes exactly with what he said in 1 Thessalonians. With gentleness. And that's what he said, that he treated them, how gentle he was as a nursing mother. And he says, the reason is, if I do this, perhaps they will see not only that, they'll see the example, they'll be convicted of the way they ask, and they'll come to Christ. That was his motive. Paul's motive was always, how can I set a Christian example? How can I lead people to Christ? That was Paul's always motivation. That was what he was all about 24/7, 365 days a year. Now, not only in 2 Timothy with Paul, but Jesus was the same way. You remember Paul said, don't necessarily imitate Jesus, imitate me as a follower of Christ, because I've imitated Jesus. I feel like my walk is good enough that you can actually, Jesus is not on earth anymore. You can watch me here and see how Jesus would have acted, what Jesus' ministry was like in his 3 years of ministry there. If you look at Matthew 8, you don't have to turn there, but just write down Matthew 8. Just write down Matthew 8 and go back sometime this week and read that chapter. So here is a day in the life of Jesus. Every day. Okay? So, verse 1 in Matthew 8. Large crowds follow him. He heals a leper in verse 3. In verse 13, he heals the centurion's son. In verse 15, he heals Peter's mother-in-law. In verse 16, he heals many and casts out many devils. In verse 18 through 22, people come to him and want to join him and be his disciples. Not sincere. They want the fishes and the loaves. They want the miracles. They want Jesus to take care of them. They're not willing to pay the price that it took there to be his disciple. He knew they were not sincere. But he's got all these people coming to him. You think about how exhausting that would be. Just constant barrage. All the time, never alone. A barrage of people saying, give me, give me, give me, give me, give me. And never giving anything in return. Jesus was always giving, never taking. And it never let up. Exhausted. Okay? But in verses 23 through 27, they go on the boat. You know the story. And the storm comes up. And the apostles, we're going to die out here. Jesus is asleep. And we look at it and we say, boy, Jesus, that's an example of faith. That's an example of faith. That Jesus' faith knew nothing was going to go wrong. We need to be like Jesus, not like the panicking disciples. But if you ever thought, in good old Wayne County talk, Jesus just might have been flat out tarred. T-A-R-D. Okay? I've always said this. When people come up to me and say, I'm tired, they're okay. But if they're tarred, they're wore out. Right? So he was, you ever thought that what he had to go through, everything, he just might have been, he needed to rest. He was worn out. But we know the story. He calms the storm. They get off the boat. And then in verses right after that, what happens? He has to feed the 5,000. As soon as he gets off the boat, immediately. And that's just the men. There may have been 15, 20,000 people there. So he's worn out, he rests, and the next thing you know, he's got 20,000 people coming to him saying, I'm hungry. Constant, but showing love when it's just draining. Jesus was in the body and the flesh just like we were. Okay? Turn to Mark chapter 6. 9 times in the Gospels, Jesus had to get away and retreat, either to pray or to rest. 9 times. You say Jesus needed rest? Jesus absolutely needed rest. He, like I said, he was in the body like we were. Mark chapter 6. It said he was constantly going about doing good. And when you want to do good for people, you'll have a lot of takers. Look at verses 30 through 32. Mark 6, verses 30 through 32. The apostles gathered together with Jesus, and they reported to him all that they had done and taught. So they're excited. We've taught, we've done this, we performed this miracle, we cast out this demon, we've done all that. And he said to them, because he knew the toll that it took. You would think he would have said, good job. Okay? That's what I want you to do. Attaboy, attaway, coach them up, right? No. What's he say to them? Come away by yourselves to a secluded place and rest for a little while. For there were many people coming and going. This is the constant life, daily life of Jesus. Many people coming and going. That revolving door never stopped. Just constant. And what had happened? They didn't even have time to eat. Didn't have time to eat. Missy and Giles last night, and I would say, all right, let me go get you something to eat. I'll go out and get you something to eat. She says, no, I'm good. She says, I got the dogs here, and Giles, I just don't have time for it. And she said, I had some macaroni and cheese. That's what I've had today. And I said, no, let me go get you something. But when you're busy, as Paul was, as these disciples are, treating these people just like they're babies on a bottle, okay? They didn't even have time to eat. Mothers know about that. Grandmothers know about that. Showing the love and all the attention, you don't even have time to eat, okay? And they went away to a boat, to a secluded place by themselves. Okay? Now, I made a mistake here. I had my note. I said that Jesus fed the 5,000 in Matthew 8. I apologize for that. He fed the 5,000 right after this. He fed the 5,000 right after they rested. So, just as Matthew 8, as Mark 6, constantly showing kindness and loving, even when it took every bit of energy that they had. Okay? Now, there's also examples of kindness as a lifestyle in the Bible. Turn to Acts 9. So what if it's not taking away energy? What if it's not when somebody's being ugly to us, mean to us? What if it's just we're Christians, we want to be Christ-like, and we enjoy it? And it's just who we are. They say it takes 30 days to build a habit. Well, some people have spent 30 years or longer doing good things for others and loving others as Christians. And it's just ingrained. It becomes addictive and a habit just like anything else. Okay? So Acts 9. Now in Joppa, verse 36. So I'm going to start doing. I'm just going to start reading the verses and saying, okay, see who can find it first and you'll get a prize. All right. Now, verse 36. Now in Joppa, there was a disciple named Tabitha, which when translated means Dorcas. This woman was excelling. Now, I want you to think, that's interesting terminology. She excelled in acts of kindness and charity, which she did habitually. Two words, excelling and habitually. Quality and quantity. She loved doing good for others so much that it was a habit. And she was good at it. In fact, she was excellent at it. And we're going to read about another lady doing the way she conducted herself, that the word excellence is also used for her. But it was a habit. That's the kindness that we're talking about as Christians, as believers. Kindness should be a habit. It shouldn't be something that we do every now and then, or somebody's good to us. It's easy to do that. Somebody's good to us, we'll be good to them. But it's just a habit. You know people like that. I know people like that. We got a lot of people in this church like that. A lot. And I love you for it. I see it every day, every week in actions that you do. How you love people, how you take care of people, you don't ask anything in return. We've got a lot of people like that here. Okay? Now, I read some of the things that she did. She sewed tunics and other garments for widows and the poor. Okay? Now, like I said, it's easy to be kind when somebody to be kind back. It's also easy to be kind to people when you know they have the money or the power or the position to do good things back to you and they can help you. It's easy to be kind to people who can help you. What about that person who's not in a situation they can't do anything back for you? You help them just because you're a Christian. You do that habitually. You love others knowing that they can't really do anything in return. I think about that a lot with animals. I think a lot about kindness, how you treat animals, how you treat older people, how you treat kids, how you treat people who maybe living beings, animals, living beings, who basically are in a helpless situation. If you set a dog out, it makes me sick to see people do that. You set a dog out, that dog can't survive. Okay? Can't survive. Starved to death. You see them all the time like that. It's pitiful. But I'll see stuff on social media where it says it never hurts to be kind or be kind. And you'll see some poor dog or animal or something. And they've been neglected. And you see a person feed them or a person take it in. And it always says, be kind. Not getting anything in return, but helping something, being an animal, a person, something like that, they can't help themselves. That's the perfect, to me, definition of kindness. Now, turn to Ruth chapter 2. Ruth chapter 2. So I'm going to go back to the Old Testament here. Ruth chapter 2. Now, Ruth is, obviously, we know her from the Old Testament. But how Ruth kind of found her way in to Scripture is kind of interesting, because she was in a tough circumstance, very tough circumstance. She wasn't in her home country. She was poor. She had a death in her family. But God favored her and used her because of two things: her kindness and her character. And Ruth's name, as long as we're on earth here and we have a Bible, Ruth's name will always live. Now, I want you to think about one thing too. Tabitha just sold cloaks and things like that and gave to the poor and to the widows. And we'll read about Tabitha to the end of time. Do you think that she thought because she did that she would be, I don't know if you would call her famous, maybe not a lot of people know about Tabitha, but we do here. Did you think that she thought people in Waynesboro, Tennessee, 2,000 years from now will be reading about me? So that's interesting, but that's because of her kindness. So look at Ruth 2. Okay, so it says now, we're going to read verses 1 through 13. So now, Naomi had a relative of her husband, a man of great wealth of the family, of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, "Please let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain, following one in whose eyes I might find favor." So she's going out in the fields, basically, to survive. Okay? That's where she's at. And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." So she left and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the portion of the field that belonged to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. Now behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said to the reapers, "May the Lord be with you." And they said to him, "May the Lord bless you." Then Boaz said to his servant, who was in charge of the reapers, "Whose young woman is this?" So she's at the stage where she's below the servant. Boaz's servant is in charge of her. So that's where she's at on the food chain. Okay? And the servant in charge of the reapers replied, "She is a young Moabite woman who returned with Naomi from the land of Moab." So she's not even in her home country, okay? Foreigner. And she said, "Please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves." So she came and has remained from the morning until now, and she has been sitting in the house for a little while. Now verse 8. Then Boaz said to Ruth, "Listen carefully, my daughter. Do not glean in another field. Furthermore, do not go on from this one, but join my young women here. Keep your eyes on the field, which they reap, and go after them. Indeed, I have ordered the servants not to touch you." Now, she's not in a safe place there. A woman, four women, we've heard the horror stories of things that go on at the border from the human smugglers. They're horrible. Okay? This was not a safe situation for her. Okay? "When you are thirsty, go to the water jars and drink what the servants draw." Then she fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your sight that you may take notice of me since I'm a foreigner?" Now you're saying, why in the world are you reading? We're talking about kindness. Why in the world are you reading this? Well, look, I did all that to get here. Look at the next verse. Verse 11. Boaz replied to her, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law after the death of your husband has been fully reported to me. And how you left your father and your mother in the land of your birth and came to a people that you did not previously know." So she did it after her husband died. She took care of her mother-in-law, her husband's mother. Okay? Didn't have to do that. But that was the act of kindness, and that act of kindness was reported to Boaz, And it really made a difference. He noticed that. And it helped her. It helped her move on from where she's at. Kindness meant something. It meant that Ruth would have a better life. Ruth didn't do that to have a better life. Ruth did that because that's really what she was supposed to do. But you see how it helped. And Boaz said, I've taken notice of that, how kind you were. Okay? May the Lord reward your work, and may your wages be full from the Lord and the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. Now I want you to go forward to a chapter. Go to Ruth chapter 3, verses 10 and 11. Move forward a chapter. And I wouldn't have said that much about it if it wasn't for Ruth chapter 3. Ruth 2 was really the buildup. Look at verses 10 and 11. Then he said, "May you be blessed, my daughter. You have shown your last kindness to be better than the first by not going after young men, whether rich or poor." So he's saying this. Your first kindness is what you did to your mother-in-law. Your second kindness is just not. You're single now, your husband's died, and you're over here in a bad spot, and you're just throwing yourself at these men. I've noticed that, probably because a lot of them did. But he said, "I've noticed you're not like that. You're a lady, you've got character. So now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you whatever you say for all my people in this city." And so this guy's in charge. He said, "I'll do whatever you say because of the character you have. For all my people in this city know," here we go, "that you are a woman of excellence. Because of your kindness, because of your character." If somebody calls you a person of excellence to me, that is an unbelievable compliment. But that was the same thing they said about Tabitha. Her excellence. You remember that? Go back to Acts 9. You don't have to, I will. And it said, she excelled. That's excellence. Excelled in the acts of kindness and charity, which she did habitually. Excellence in the Hebrew meant top or best quality. So that doesn't mean you're good. That means you are the best. That's the way he looked at her, because of how kind she was to the mother-in-law and what her character was. Character means something. Kindness means something. It got Ruth ahead. It may not get you ahead. And nobody may ever notice. But you know who knows? And he keeps a record on it. God. God knows. Every good deed, every good thing that you do for somebody else, every act of kindness and charity that you do, God knows. And not only does he know, you'll be rewarded for it. You'll be rewarded for it. It may go unnoticed here, and that's not important. That's not important. But God knowing and rewarding, that's important. It doesn't get any better than that. Last thing, turn to Luke chapter 10. Luke chapter 10, verses 30 through 37. We all know the Good Samaritan. We all know that story. Learned it as a kid. The Good Samaritan helped a guy who'd been robbed and beaten. He didn't have to. But we look at it and we say, okay, he just did a good deed. He had compassion, right? But it's deeper than that. So Luke 10, if you'll go verse 30 through 37. Verse 30 through 37. So if you'll remember, they're asking about, who's my neighbor? Okay? Who is? Love your neighbor. Love your neighbors yourself. But who's my neighbor? Well, Jesus replied and said, verse 30, a man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he encountered robbers, and they stripped him, and they beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. So you've heard about leaving somebody for dead. That's what happened. They just didn't punch him or any of that. They meant to kill him or close to it. And by coincidence, a priest was going down on that road. So a priest, man of God, right? Religious. Was going down the road, and when he saw him, surely he'd stop and help. You know, he's a man of the cloth. Well, what's he do? He passed by on the other side. Reminds me of the priest. Remember High Plains Drifter, Clint Eastwood? They're going by and burning the town down and all that stuff. And so all these people's been burned out of their home. They go to the hotel, and they're staying in a hotel, and the preacher comes by and he's charging them and all that stuff. And the preacher says, you know, this is abomination. These poor people have been burned out of their home and they don't have a home, and you're charging them. And he said, well, you're God's man. You keep them. And he says, brothers and sisters, I'll give you a boat at my house for not 1 cent more than the hotel rates. So that was, you'll get it later on, I promise. But that was this guy. Puts me in mind of this guy here. He's not worried about other people. He just goes on, does his own thing. Likewise, a Levite also, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, remember, Samaritans, they're not to have anything to do with, really, with others. Outside of their tribe there. But a Samaritan who was on a journey came upon him, and when he saw him, he felt compassion and came to him and bandaged up his wounds, pouring oil and wine on them, and he put him on his own animal and brought him to the inn and took care of him. So it wasn't enough. He helped him a little bit there. He put him on his own animal to transport him. He walked who knows how many miles. So he's already gone above and beyond, okay? And then, on the next day, verse 35, he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper and said, take care of him, and whatever more you spend, I will repay you, okay? So he's putting his money where his mouth is, a guy who he doesn't even know. And I know it wasn't as steep as it is now. But he's saying, hey, I'll foot the bill here. I'll take care of the hospital bill. Whatever it costs, I'll take care of it. That's an example of love. That's more than me just seeing a guy down and out and helping him out a little bit. Here's a bite to eat or something like that. He really, really showed kindness to this individual and did a lot of things that he wasn't asked to do. Okay? Which of these three do you think proved to be a neighbor to the man who fell into the robber's hands? And they said the one who showed compassion to him. Then Jesus said to them, go and do the same. As this man did, as the kindness and love and compassion that he did, you do the same. Because everybody's your neighbor. As long as you are sharing the faith, you're not picking and choosing who you share it to. Everybody's your neighbor. Some people may hate you for it. Some people you may not get along with. Some people it may be really, really tough. The ones like we talked about last week. When you know it's people, you've heard the saying, I've got to love people I don't like. So you're kind of in that boat. Or it might be a situation where you're constantly showing love and kindness, but man, it's just zapping everything you got, and it's draining you, and it's taking all your energy. But we're not to stop. We're to continue loving. And then, if we get to the point where we just habitually, it's who we are, it's ingrained in us as Christians, as believers, that we just want to be good to people. We want to love people. We want to be kind and compassionate to people. Jesus said, you go and do the same. That's who you're supposed to be. So there's different kind of kindness. I think the people here are wonderful. I think you guys are wonderful. I think you've shown so many examples of this. But even if you do, I think we all get in a situation where we have things happen in our lives and we're just like, Lord, help me. You may be going through stuff now. Well, maybe it's an individual. Maybe it's just energy. Maybe it's attitude. Maybe you're at a low point and you're just saying, Lord, I need your help. I need your help to be kind. I need your help to just have a Christian attitude. That's about the last thing I say when I get out of the car. I pray every morning going to school. And one of the things that come out, I said, Lord, please help me have a Christian attitude today. And it's not easy. Help me show up. I want people to know that I'm a believer. Not because I go around telling them. I want them to see my actions. I just want them to see how I interact with people. I want people to know, not know me, but know the Lord. I've told you this, I hadn't been, been Christian maybe about a year or two. And Scott Ashley, I sat down at lunch table one day, and he said, I tell you Christian now. And I said, how? And he said, and Scott is too. And he said, your whole attitude's, your attitude's different. I said, was I that bad? He said, no, not at all. He said, but I can just tell even from there. I can tell. You can tell when people have that peace. And that's what we need to have. Not bragging on me at all, because I'd probably been plenty of times he was saying, man, why did I tell him that? He's backslid. But that's who we, Jesus says, go and do the same. This is who we need to be. This is who we need to be through the week. This is who we need to be in interactions with people daily. Martha Jo, if you'll come and play. And we all need help in this. We all do. As good as we do, we can always do better, but there's always those struggles and these things. Not so much of our struggles that we have to pray to the Lord and say, Lord, help me, is from interactions with other people. Hey, as long as we're alive, we're going to be around people. So, Martha Jo, if you'll play.